This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Hello, I'm Casey Cooper. The book, Thousand-Year-Old Dream, The One. The author, Rebecca Eyre.
How did you come to write this book? What motivated you?
Well, I've been reading romance novels my whole life, and honestly, I'm kind of addicted to them. And I always find that the books that I read, there's always something missing, whether there's not enough action or not enough mystery, not enough adventure or not enough sex. So for probably over 20 years, I have wanted to write my own book. But of course, you know, life gets in the way and you never have time. And finally, I thought, you know what? I can't keep waiting. I'll be dead before I ever write a book. So I just sat down and decided to write what I want to read. And I hope that my readers will feel the same way.
Who do you feel this book appeals to and why?
So I think the book will appeal to mostly women of all ages who love romance novels, a novel that has passion and adventure and action, excitement. It's mostly for women, but I think that some men might find it fun to read too, because there's a lot of action in there. And also the book is told from the point of view of women and of a woman and a man. So it goes back and forth between the two main characters. So you kind of get the sense what both of them are thinking. So I think mostly women, but men too, but definitely adults though, because this is a book for adults. It's not for teenagers. It's not for kids.
What's one thing you want readers to take away from your work?
Well, I want them to go on a roller coaster ride with me and never want to get off. And I want them to read this book and want to read more and more and more about these two characters. And I've been telling my friends who have read the books, who read the book, and they have told me that they don't want to rate it by stars. They want to rate it by wet panties. How many wet panties? So instead of 5 stars, they'll give it 5 wet panties. But this is top quality trash, because I read a lot of trash and some of them are pretty bad. Poorly written, stupid storytelling, doesn't make any sense. But this, you get it all. You get quality.
Very nice. What's one scene or characters that you'd like to highlight during this interview?
Well, I have a scene here, but I'm not sure if I can read it on the radio or tell it to you on the radio. It's triple X rated.
Okay. Do you have a version and or maybe just some vague characteristics that you'd like to express?
Yeah, maybe I'll just read the rated PG version instead of the XXX rated version. So this book is about a love story, of course. But unfortunately, without giving a lot away, the two characters cannot be together. And the way that I tell the story, some of it is in dreams. And it's really dreams that they're both having about each other. And that's how they feel, get closer to each other. And there's a lot of supernatural parts of the story. So part of that plays into the supernatural world too. So in this one scene, it's told by the main character Emma's point of view. And she is dreaming, but she's not sure. So she's in a room that's completely white, white walls, white furniture, white bed, and a big square white glass window with the shape of fire in the middle that is red. It must have been twilight because she could barely make out the dark blue sea outside the window. and she's in bed with him. And of course, now it gets into the triple X part. But basically, they're making love in this white room that she doesn't recognize. So a lot of the story has these dream elements in it. But you will see eventually in the next installment of the book that this has meaning, that this is not just a dream, that it actually it's foretelling something that will happen in the future.
Before we go any further, where can we find your material?
It's everywhere. So it's on Amazon as a paperback, as a Kindle book. It's on Nook, the Barnes & Noble platform. It's on Lulu.com, which is my publishing company. It's on iBooks. So it's readily downloadable anytime, anywhere for $4.99.
Very nice and very accessible.
Yes.
The author, Rebecca Eyre. The book, Thousand Year Old Dream, The One.
How would you introduce your book to a friend or maybe an acquaintance in a few sentences?
Well, I would tell them that my book is a romance novel, first and foremost. But it's not just a romance novel. So it's an erotic romance novel, but it weaves the natural with the supernatural world. And it's not just sex. Sex is number one, but it's got action, it's got adventure, it's got heartbreak, it has a mystery, and of course, love. And it is a fairy tale. So like most romance novels, it is a fairy tale, but incorporating everything for an exciting read.
When and where does this story take place?
The story takes place in present time Croatia. And I chose the setting because there is actually a real thousand-year-old dream. The thousand-year-old dream, the title of the book, it's not made up. It's actually real. So the story is based on real life events. And I really chose this setting because a lot of people don't know. It's happening in our present day. Then everybody knows about the story and what happened on the news because you saw it on the news. But you really didn't know the backstory behind it and how important it is for this little country. So that's why I chose it.
That's very interesting. Tell me how your book is unlike others with similar topics. What sets it apart?
So my book is a little different than the other typical romance novels or even the erotic romance novels like 50 Shades of Grey. Because most novels concentrate more just on the psychological parts of love and relationships between a man and a woman. So my book takes a little further because I not just read romance novels. I love mysteries. I love spy novels. So I'm trying to incorporate everything into this book. So you're not just going to get your romance. You're also going to get action. You're going to get adventure. You are going to get a lot of supernatural blend in with the natural world. So you're not sure what's what. And I take you through this journey where you find out everything slowly. In the beginning, you know nothing. You think it's just these two people happen to meet by accident in Croatia in the middle of a war. But nothing else you know about them until you slowly find out the changes that happens over time with both of them. So what my book says, it really sets it apart from other romance novels because it takes it a step further. I hope it's what I want to see, and whether I see a movie for entertainment or read a book, is that I want everything at the same time so that it's exciting. It's not boring. One thing I can't stand is boring.
The book, Thousand Year Old Dream, The One, by Rebecca Eyre.
What three words do you feel best describe your work?
Exciting, heart-wrenching, because some of it is really sad, and of course, steamy sex.
Steamy, I like that.
Steamy, actually even more than steamy. supernatural steamy, like beyond your wildest dreams.
Supernaturalistically steamy.
Yes. I was going to make a joke. So for women, they're going to have the wet panties rating. So for a guy, it's going to be how many hard-ons you get.
What was one of the most challenging parts about writing this book?
So the most challenging part about writing it is finding the time to write everything down. I mean, I have so many storylines in my head because this is a trilogy. I got the whole thing planned out already. And I have all these storylines and little scenarios of things that are happening. And just trying to have time to put it all down on paper. It's like I can't write fast enough and I'll be doing something, you know, taking a shower. And all of a sudden I think of something and I want to write it down. And I don't have enough time. And I'm afraid that if I let some time lapse, you know how you forget and you lose your train of thought. You lose the wording and what you wanted to write. So the most challenging part is having enough time in the day, still go to work and still sleep and still eat and still do all those life things and be able to write a book as fast as I can.
It seems like you're having fun and you're very excited about this. So you have more material in the works?
Oh, I have so much material in the works. Yes, definitely. Oh, I'm having so much fun. I'm getting my own wet panties just writing it. If I wasn't enjoying it, I wouldn't be doing it.
Very well put. Is there anything that we haven't covered you feel your audience needs to know about your work?
Yes, I do want people to know that writing this book, I mean, even though I have so many storylines and so many things to tell and of where these two characters will go, but it's definitely the most hardest thing I've ever done in my entire life. And so this book was a pure labor of love. I really had to love it, to put this much time and dedication into it. And like I said, I want to write quality trash. I don't want to write crap and just put it out there, just a bunch of words that doesn't make any sense. I really want people to love it and enjoy it. And I hope my readers will enjoy reading as much as I enjoy writing it. And stay tuned for book 2 and book 3.
Well, that's very exciting. Rebecca, thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you, Casey, so much for your time.
The book, Thousand-Year-Old Dream, The One. The author, Rebecca Ayer.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to BabyInstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying to 14 ways to get a baby to eat and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled The King Who Hates the Color Green. And joining me from the New York City area is Dr. Patrick DeRespinas. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Hello, Jay.
Pleasure visiting with you. Your book looks like it's directed towards children. How would you describe your book and the background and how it got written?
Well, my book is a fantasy book. And it was originally conceptualized from a simple game I played as a child. And I remembered the game that we played as a child, and I kind of, based on that, I kind of created the book's imagery and stuff.
You say you created the imagery. Were you personally involved in the actual artwork?
No. And I'm only talking about imagery, you know, in terms of my, you know, my thoughts about the book. I did not create the artwork, although I do love the artwork.
The artwork is spectacular. You have a background, and your primary focus is in the medical arts. Share what your focus is there.
Well, I'm a pediatric ophthalmologist. I take care of children's eye problems. I perform surgery on children who have eye problems, such as crossed eyes, otherwise known as strabismus. My interest in children, obviously, led me to write the book, because I did write a previous book also pertaining to the eyes.
The book talks about the color green, the king who hates the color green. Why that particular title, and how does it impact the story that you've created?
Well, I pretty much compared green to as being a joyful color, and the king in this story had a difficult time in the loss of his child in the forest. Because of this incident, he compared the forest to the color green, and at that point he pretty much started to hate the color green, and that compelled him to find a magic wand, and at the same time use the magic wand for bad purposes, such as destroying the forest.
And Doctor, how long ago did you come up with the idea, and how long did it take to flesh out the characters and the storyline?
Well, I think I wrote this book over a period of 2 years, even though I had been thinking about it 5 years. So it's pretty much 5 years in the making. I wrote it in 2 years, and there's been different copies of the actual story that have been written, but this was the finalized copy.
And have you always wanted to be involved in the creative side of writing, of being a writer, an author?
Well, yeah, I've written a lot of peer-reviewed medical illustrations. I'm sorry, peer-reviewed medical books and peer-reviewed medical articles. I decided to write poetry because I was interested in a lot of poetry when I was a child, such as, you know, poetry by Edgar Allan Poe, Samuel Coleridge. And the epic poems always interested me.
Those were an impact on you. And were there other people that impacted the love of books and literature?
Well, when I was growing up in school, there were a number of teachers who pretty much gave me, who influenced me in poetry. And I think that's the reason why I gravitated towards it.
You have created a book that is very colorful. Your illustrations look very complex. Was it complicated to get the illustrations to match the storyline, or did you find an illustrator that was pretty much on track?
Well, Archway Publications were excellent in linking me up to the proper illustrator. I saw the illustrations, and I immediately thought that these were an excellent match to my poetry.
The storyline itself, you talk about the forest and the other aspects of this. When was it written? Not the book itself, but when was the storyline? Where does it take place, and what period? And is it a fantasy world?
Yes, it is. It is a fantasy world. It takes place in a mythical kingdom, and this mythical kingdom is led by a king who has a son, and the son veers off into the forest and is lost. The storyline could be at any point in time, but I basically put it at many years ago in a very far off place, as does much fantasy occur. So I think that the basic premise here is to just put you into a fantasy world. The forest pretty much is a place where there is beautiful greenery and vegetation, and it gives the appearance of beauty. And when the king loses his son, evil fills his heart, and he's despondent. And because of this, he strikes out against the forest as being the thing which he remembers as his son being lost in. So at this point in time, he takes it upon himself to destroy that which is beautiful. And the son, who is now growing up to be a young knight, is raised by a wizard in the forest, and this wizard is the wizard who protected him when he thought he was lost and being hunted down by knights. So this whole story, this whole premise occurs because of a mistake that was made when the child was lost from his father.
You have also in your story some allegory and some hints of prophecy. What do those relate to?
Well, the prophecy issue is that, again, the color green becomes an issue. The child's eyes are green. And the prophecy is that a young knight from somewhere with green eyes will come and defeat the king who is causing all of this mischief and pain in the kingdom because of everything being turned to gray and brown. Mm. So this young knight is being raised by the wizard far off from the kingdom, and he has green eyes. And the prophecy will say that this young knight will come back and defeat the king. Now, the king and the child, they're unaware that they're father and son. And the wizard is unaware at this point that this is the father and the son. Mm. But as you can see, what will happen and transpired through the story has a lot to do with the color green and the prophecy and the wizardry that occurs because of the magic that's occurring and the loss of the color green and the wizard's wand, which was found by the king. All of these things come to a head at the end of the story.
Would you describe your book as an entertainment read for younger children, or how would you describe it?
You know, if I didn't put it into a children's book form, it could be read by an adult. But because I decided that it had a lot of the charm that you would see in a story, because present day, if you notice, a lot of things are being written and today, and also there's a lot of movies today which concern wizardry and sorcery, such as Harry Potter and the Chronicles of Narnia, Lord of the Rings. These things, the kids have a great interest in this type of a read today. So I put this into a children's format. I think any child from, you know, 5 to 12 could read this and enjoy it. And many of my friends who were adults read it and thought it was also an easy read and even good for them. But because it's in a child's book format, obviously children will appreciate it more.
Is there an underlying, I don't know, theme, moral? Is there a real message that is hidden in here that may not be obvious, but one that you wanted to convey to the reader?
Yes, Jay. You know, I think the family is such an important and integral part of society. And I think when the family is broken up, there's a certain amount of pain that occurs. And this pain in the book is pretty much shown through by the king striking out against the color green. And when the family is reunited, all the bad things that had occurred disappeared, and things went back to a happy, wonderful type of world again. So I think the underlying theme is the importance of family values. Also, the other part of the book which I thought was important is the importance of the forest and the trees and how important it is for human beings to be surrounded by nature. And when nature is destroyed, there's a lot of pain and people become saddened, and that's why this book has those two aspects which are very important.
You have also described this as parental love is eternal and powerful. That is the main focus of what you're trying to achieve in this 46-page book.
Right, and again, parental love. The father, once he finds out and discovers that the young knight is his son, all of the evil and hatred leaves his heart, and he falls to his knees. And when the wizard comes and explains the cruel joke that was played by fate, the king says, "Please put this world back to a happy place and make it and change it from a greenless hell to a beautiful place again." And that in itself shows you how just the reuniting of the father and the son at the end of the book made everything better again, and that the parental love aspect comes in there.
Were there any challenges in getting this completed? I know you have written a lot of other material and articles and so on, but this is a different approach from what you have done in the past. Were there challenges that you had to overcome?
Well, anytime you put anything in a poetic format, I think there's a difficulty there in conveying your impressions so that they fit into the format and also tell the story. So that and making it, you know, making it an easy read for a child. Rhyming has never been difficult for me, but again, you want to make the story an easy one to read. You want the important facts and storyline to come out. You want it to be in a certain order, which is decipherable. And all of those things together, you know, it's easy to just write prose and just write it out the way you're thinking it. But when you're writing a poem, you have to, you know, follow a certain format. That in itself is difficult.
That is difficult. Shades of Dr. Seuss, perhaps. Maybe that influenced some of your thinking. Are you planning to do a sequel or a follow-up book to this, The King Who Hates the Color Green?
Well, I always have ideas in my mind, and certainly that was one of them. For the present time, I'd like to see this book go through its stages and see how the readership reacts to it. Once I see that, then I'll certainly be thinking about another follow-up book.
46 pages of poetic storytelling, the storyline, and the title, The King Who Hates the Color Green. Patrick DeRespinas has been my guest. Doctor, where can they get copies of your book?
Well, I know it's available at barnesandnoble.com. It's available also through Archway Publishing, and it's available through Amazon Books. So there's a number of ways that you can, and also it's available on e-books. So there's a number of ways you can get this article, this book, and I certainly be looking forward to the readers and people who listen to this indie broadcast to obtain the book.
Fabulous. Let me spell your last name so my listeners can also do a search under your name. DeRespinas is spelled D-E, capital R-E-S-P-I-N-I-S. For those of you who want to do a search online, you can keep in contact with Dr. DeRespinas as he continues his writing career as well as his practice. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
Thank you very much, Jay, for having me.
My pleasure. For Archway Publishing, this is Jay Douglas Parker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Hello, I'm Casey Coomer. The book, Just Maggie, by Virginia Burton Stringer. How are you today, Virginia?
I'm just fine, Casey. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for being here with us. Now, how did you come to write this book? What motivated you?
Well, the truth of the matter is, I did not start out to write a book. My medium has always been in theater, in youth theater, in fact. And so I had planned to write a small play for children, about a 50-minute play about an impetuous little princess. The main character, Maggie, is an amalgamation, actually, of my two daughters and my two granddaughters. So in watching my son raise his girls and remembering some of the difficulties of raising his sisters, the ideas just seemed to flow like water. But then I knew it was no longer a play when there was more scenery description, and then it was 150 pages long. And so I realized I had embarked upon a journey that has lasted and taken me 10 years, and it's a wonderful adventure of my own. So, yeah, so I didn't actually start out to write a book, but now Just Maggie is published, and then there are four more books in the series with no end in sight, actually. So, yeah, that's how it started.
Wow, that's very exciting. You know, you think you're writing a play, and then you write a series.
Yep. Yep, well, that's how it worked. And, you know, if anybody has raised daughters, if anybody has daughters, has raised girls, has sisters, and remembers them through their teens, there's a lot of inspiration there.
I can see that opening up a lot of windows of opportunity to learn. What does this – I'm sorry, I'm going to ask you that again. Who does this book appeal to and why?
Well, actually, it's written for middle readers, which are the middle, upper elementary to middle school to high school readers. However, my husband, who is certainly not in that category, has read it, and he feels like there is opportunity for everyone to enjoy the book. He thinks there's a huge adult audience out there as well. He has also read more books than the rest of the series as one of my sort of ghost readers and one of my critical readers to find, you know, my footing on where the story is going. But he feels like that it's appropriate for boys and girls, men and women, anyone who likes mystery, magic, a little intrigue here and there. He feels like that it's appropriate for them. So, yeah, so I think probably about, you know, it's a pretty wide range. In fact, let me start that over.
Okay.
Can we start that part over?
Yes, ma'am.
In an independent review by Maria's Space, which is an online site, she has a family books for summer reading section. And she wrote, "My kids and I read this book together, and it was really fun to read with them." So she enjoyed it as well as they did. She enjoyed the vocabulary, and my little character, the Hugger Mugger, has his own language, and she enjoyed going back and forth with the glossary, learning that. In fact, her kids now want to go to Brooklyn and go to Spumoni Gardens and try Spumoni ice cream. So, you know, there's a lot in it for all the age groups.
Well, very nice. What is one thing you want readers to take away and or learn from your material?
I think probably the most important takeaway is that perfection is not all it's cracked up to be. Maggie is not perfect. She is flawed. She's stubborn, self-absorbed, devious. She's very intelligent, she's very passionate about what she wants, and she'll stop at nothing to get it. Now, these are all traits that make children really difficult to deal with sometimes. However, they're traits that, when she is an adult, will make her powerful, confident, successful. And I think it's especially important for young girls to know that when someone tells them that they're tough or they're stubborn, they should just look and say, "Gosh, thanks." Take it as a compliment. So I think that's important. That's an important little tidbit to take away.
What scene or character would you like to highlight during this interview?
Oh, gosh. There are quite a few really fun moments in the book, but I think the first one that's just really fun, that grabs the reader, is Maggie's temper tantrum at breakfast because there's no more Spumoni ice cream. She proceeds to just tear the room up, and then it doesn't get any better because later on, very shortly, later in the afternoon, she has a 13th birthday party, and there's a huge food fight, and it's just a mess, and it just befuddles poor King Henry, and he finally just takes her to the summer castle. Of course, that's where her whole world changes. So I think those are really important. I think the scene where they arrive at the summer castle and she meets Grandpa Chris and Grandma Polly for the first time is extremely poignant, because we suddenly for the first time see that perhaps her bratty behavior might be really her vulnerability. She has a lot of insecurities, and she's not a solidly well-liked child because of her bratty behavior. And maybe we begin to see that that behavior is a cover-up for her real insecurities. So I think those are really important. Of course, no fairy tale is complete without a handsome prince. And there's a really sweet little scene where she first meets Prince Rodolfo. And, of course, that's where she starts getting herself into real trouble because she lies about her age and he catches her in it. And then she finds out he's a prince and is going to be her guest for dinner. And, oh, my gosh, it just goes downhill from there. So it's really kind of fun there. Another one is where she meets at the summit meeting, where she meets a young man named Awana Ubuku, who is not a very nice guy. And this is a pivotal moment in Maggie's life because it's the first time she really stands up and really stands up against a bully, a real nasty person, and she's not afraid to stand her ground. But she also learns the fine art of negotiation. So there's a good point there. So there are a lot of others, and it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. I could go on and on, but I won't. I won't give away the whole book.
We've only got so much time, of course. The book, Just Maggie, by Virginia Burton Stringer. Now, Virginia, how would you introduce this book to a friend in a few sentences?
Well, for me, a few sentences is difficult, but I'll try to contain myself. Just Maggie, I would say, is about an impetuous little princess who insists on getting her own way until she goes to the summer castle, and that's where her whole world changes. Princess Melania Abigail Alice Grace, and that's what Maggie stands for, is transformed from a frightened, bratty little girl to a savvy, confident young lady. How's that?
That's beautiful.
Good.
Tell us how your book is unlike others with similar topics. What sets it apart?
Well, first of all, it's a fairy tale, and it's set in a long ago, far away time, more whimsical, where honor, manners, and chivalry are the word of the day. The main character, however, I think is relatable to adolescent girls of any era, because any 13-year-old goes through the same emotional highs and lows and so on. And so her reactions and her behaviors are very similar to any 13-year-old today. However, I've taken away the trappings of modern society, in so much as I've distanced Maggie from today's slang vernacular, and I use a very clean, classic vocabulary. I've taken her away from the world of cell phones and instant message and abbreviations. Half the kids today don't even know how to spell the words that they're abbreviating. Half of them don't know what the words really mean. And so in Maggie's world, I use a more sophisticated vocabulary. And I did that to keep the purity of the experience without all the muddles of modern convenience. And I think that I think that really sets it apart. It's easy to understand what's going on, but, you know, we don't talk about electric lights and automobiles and trucks and airplanes and cell phones and, you know, all of that stuff is gone from it. It's just the pure magic of a young girl with great power, and the power it comes in all forms, and none of it has to do with electricity. So I think that's what really sets it apart, and I think that's what makes it unique and fun in the literary world today.
That is very exciting. What are three words that would best describe your story and or characters?
Oh, gosh. well, I think the first word that comes to mind for both the characters and the story would be charming. I think I think once you start, someone said to me, even though Maggie is such a brat in the beginning, and throughout her life, even in all the other books, she's still a brat. She grows up. She takes more responsibility. She learns a lot about life and a lot about herself, but she's still kind of a brat. However, you like Maggie because she has lots of redeeming qualities. So I think charming is one. Mysterious. There's a lot of mystery surrounding the Summer Castle, Grandpa Chris and Grandma Polly. They've been there as long as anybody can remember, and even the oldest people around can't remember anyone ever being there. So how does that happen? Well, you have to read the book and find out. And I think endearing is another word. I think the characters are endearing to the reader. I think the reader gets very invested in the characters and in the story. And in fact, this comes directly from another adult, a friend of mine who is reading it and is chomping at the bit. She lives in England, and she's chomping at the bit for me to send her the copies of the rest of the books so that she can read them and find out what was happening. So I think the three words would have to be charming, mysterious, and endearing.
Very excellent. What was one of the most challenging parts about writing this book?
To be honest with you, I never considered myself to be a writer. And so early on, I sort of adopted a certain style that I got very attached to. And of course, as time went on and as people read it for me and critiqued for me, I realized that the style is not what's important. It's the story that's important, and whatever moves the story forward. The other thing that I found very challenging was that when I realized when I went back and looked at the book, remember it took me almost 10 years to write the first book, and it actually ended up being cut in half and became just Maggie, and then the second book, Crispin, which will probably come out in the fall of 2016, because it was just simply too long. There were too many themes, so I had to cut it in half. But anyway, one of the things that I realized when I went back and kept reading over my work is that there was a lot of information, there was a lot there that I had written for me, totally for me, and that no one else would probably enjoy. So I had to come upon a crossroads in my life. Am I writing this book just for me, and am I going to write it and then put it away and be happy that I've had this cathartic moment? Or am I going to write a book that I would like other people to read? And if that's the case, then I've got to get out the red pen and I've got to get out the tissues, because there's going to be a lot of cutting and crying. And in fact, that was the decision I made. So that was a huge hurdle. That was a huge challenge for me to look at my own work and distance myself from certain things and really be brutal with the cuts. For instance, one particular little segment, I had an entire like 7, 8, 9 page chapter written, and I ended up cutting that down to one paragraph. So it was difficult and it was painful at times. And that's what took me the longest, I think. But in doing so, what it did for me is it helped me in the future books to streamline the writing, to stick to the story, and to clean up all of that business and get rid of that sort of business I had stuck in my head and move forward with it. And so that facilitated the other books being written much, much faster and much cleaner, I think. So, yeah, I think that was the biggest hurdle, is getting over myself.
Very excellent. I'm going to do one more reset, ask you a final question, and we'll be done, okay?
Okay, sounds good.
The book, Just Maggie, by Virginia Burton Stringer. Now, Virginia, is there anything else you'd like to cover during this interview you feel would best represent your book?
I think you've probably asked me most of the questions that I would like for readers to know. Some of the themes I think that are important, maybe. I think the central theme of the book is really about a young girl's struggle when she is growing into womanhood. I think that's key, and I think that's universal. And of course, with Maggie, it starts on her 13th birthday, which is certainly a time of hormonal changes, emotional roller coasters, storm clouds on the horizon, and her daddy raised her by himself and spoiled her rotten. So I think that's important to know, is the central theme is watching a young girl come of age, strength of character, standing up for what's right, regardless of the risk. And I think certainly with recent events in our national history, it's pointed out the need for all of us to do that and for young people to stand up for what they believe. And I think it's important that in Maggie is constantly surrounded by people who teach her what is right. She doesn't always do it the first time, but she knows what's right. And I think the next thing, the next most important thing is teaching children to stand up for what is right, stand by it and stand up for it. And I think that's another important theme. And a strong moral code. I think this is another really important theme in Maggie, because integrity and humility are essential for Maggie to become a respected queen eventually. And I think in our society, in the working world, in our dealings with people, there's nothing more important than the trust of friends and colleagues. And I think sometimes that's getting lost in our society with young people, because it seems like today the central theme is, hey, if it works and you can get away with it, that's okay, with no moral connection, no little inner voice saying, you know what, that's just not right. So I think that would be probably the one thing I would add, is that, you know, these are the central themes and this is what we need to be teaching our kids. And so I think it's a good book for parents and kids to read to get those messages.
The author, Virginia Burton Stringer, the book, Just Maggie. Virginia, thank you very much for being here with us today.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure. I enjoyed it very much.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.